warrior who protects his people from monstrous giants. He was the idol of Vikings and barbarians in the darkest age ever known to man. But few know the reality behind his myth. He battled the ancient world's most colossal sea monster. And he was the last hope for Europe's pagans as they defied the armies of Christendom. Fact and fiction collide in the myth of the mighty Thor. Two arch enemies battle to the death. Thor, the thunder god, against a staggering beast. A giant snake who strikes with lethal force. It is man versus monster. Thor unleashes his deadliest weapon, lightning from his magic hammer, as thunder rocks heaven and earth. The myth of Thor is filled with these epic showdowns, heroic battles against creatures who threaten mankind.
Thor is the champion of the gods. He's the great fighter who can be brought out when something is really bad. You don't go to Thor for wisdom. Go to Thor because he's going to protect you against the evil monsters.
Tales of Thor's adventures provided escape from one of the bleakest periods in human history, the Dark Ages of the first millennium AD. It was a time when the Norse world, stretching from the British Isles to the Baltic Sea, was in turmoil.
It's an agricultural society where people were farming and surviving kind of at the very edge of how it was possible to survive because it was cold. It was the northern part of Europe. It wasn't around the Mediterranean where it was much easier to grow things. And it tended to be, from everything we can tell, quite violent.
War, famine, and death were daily facts of life on the desolate northern fringes of Europe. But the myth of Thor brought a sense of order to the chaos.
It was a religion of the countryside. Paganism actually is a Latin word that describes that, what the country people believe in. And paganism is not really well organized either. It's not like the Greek pantheon in the sense that it's very well organized and everybody knows whose responsibilities and who's more important than whom. It's very different.
The view of human life in that mythology was a fairly dark, a fairly stern one. Human beings didn't look forward to the kind of salvation in heaven at the end of time that's promised in the Christian stories. They had a kind of a darker, a more sorrowful view of life. People have to show great courage and hardiness in the face of enormous obstacles.
For inspiration, the people looked to Thor.
Well, that's right, Thor. We need you now. We need you now, or we need people that act like you. Yeah, that's right. Hey, Terrible Tommy here in the bunker. Yeah, P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, right here in north central Indiana. Got about 3 or 4 inches of snow again last night and supposed to get 3 or 4 more inches today. How about that? We're in the cold country. And that's what builds men and women, men. And it is March the 3rd, 2016. And I think it's going to be a pretty good day. You know, I built a little aircraft carrier type thing outside the house here where I can watch it closely. It's for the birds. It's a piece of plywood. It's about 2 foot wide, about 3 foot long. Just bare plywood. And every morning I load that thing up with birdseed. And I observe as I go about my business, I can look out the window and see the birds and how they act and how they move around and which ones are the most aggressive and so forth. And so sometimes we get up to 20 birds on that piece of plywood at one time in all shapes and sizes and colors. The perennial sparrow is prolific. They're everywhere, and they swoop in there in a flock, and they're always around. Blue jays are feisty fighters. They come in like a jet fighter onto that piece of plywood, and tend to push the other birds around, except the doves. I find it unbelievable that they're hard to believe that we've got now a lot of doves coming in, maybe half a dozen at a time. And when they sit down on that carrier deck, they don't move unless they want to. And even the blue jays that are very aggressive don't mess with the doves. Not very often to mess with the doves. You know, we get a whole variety of birds, and it's very interesting to watch their nature and their aggressive abilities and so forth. It's watching the animal world, you learn a lot about the human world, that's for sure, because we are very high animals, whether you want to believe it or not. And the reason we're not winning as a white race is we've quit operating like higher animals. We're operating like lower animals. In fact, during this phase of evolution, the Negro is acting more in the animal way than, of course, the Aryan. The Negro doesn't have the intellectual capabilities as a race to do too much about it, but he does have the, he and she does have that primordial outlook on things, and it's sort of automatic, it's subliminal, and so that's why you got to understand that they are a formidable foe, and you have to deal with them as that. But you can't deal with them as philosophical numbskulls, Christians and Republicans and Democrats and things like that. You got to deal with these other groups of higher animals in the old-fashioned way, like Thor did, the myth god Thor. And the biggest trap in the world is when you start treating these people as equals. I mean, you don't have to be cruel to them. You don't have to be mean to them. But to treat them as equal is very mean to them, because they're not, and they never will be. And they can gene hijack, develop high yellows or mulattoes, and that's what they're doing. They're building a whole new race here in North America of mulattoes, and that's something we're going to have to deal with. Well, I see they're trotting out that old Newt Rodney that ran for president last time. It was a miserable failure, just like John McCain was a miserable failure. They're trotting him out to try to harpoon Donald Trump. It's amazing the amount of money and time and bluster they're using to go after Trump. Now, I wish he was a white separatist, and I wish he was a real white leader that I could get behind. And, of course, if you know anything about him, you know that's not true. However, he is bringing on chaos. And chaos is very important. My webmaster sent me a saying this morning from a guy by the name of Pasio. Says, the fear of the possibility of chaos is the fear of true freedom. I like that statement. I'm going to keep that around. And chaos simply means like shuffling the cards. Every once in a while, you got to shuffle the cards. Just in gambling, I mean, you go so long dealing off the hand, and you got to shuffle the cards, or throw them up in the air and see what happens when they fall down. You know, so that's what has to be now. We need chaos and things like that to hopefully better the situation. Doesn't guarantee the situation will be bettered. Sometimes it even could be worse, but I like chaos, and I'm going to stick to it. Well, my local sheriff here went up before the judge this morning, him and some guys, and Yeah, one guy they said was the Aryan Brotherhood that was tied into this criminal conspiracy. There's a preacher involved, and there's a physical trainer involved, and there's a sheriff involved. That's a crazy bunch. But yesterday they said in the paper he was Aryan Nations, this guy. I have no idea who this guy is, but I can pretty well be sure he had nothing to do with Aryan Nations. He could have had something to do with Aryan Brotherhood, of which I don't really have contact with. So that was funny. Came up Aryan Nations in the paper, you know. And I never heard of that guy. It's going to be interesting what's going to happen here. I told the boys yesterday down over at the tavern, I said, you know, I may run for sheriff. What, if they have to have another election for sheriff, if this one gets convicted, well, why shouldn't I run for sheriff? You know, I'm a big fan of genetic memory. And I observe animals and birds and everything else, but I have a Siberian husky named Natasha. And she becomes very active, more activated in the wintertime. And when it snows, she loves it. She walks around in it, no matter how hard it's snowing. She'll lay out there in 2 feet of snow, digs out a little nest, just like those sled dogs do up in Alaska. Don't ever tell me there isn't genetic memory like Jack London and the boys talked about. Genetic memory is here. And as long as genetic memory is around, we're going to be here as a race. Take it to the bank. And all these progressives and liberals and conservatives and all these bullshitters and the churches and all that and the philosophers that think they can change it and change natural selection and evolution and all that, they got to be out of their minds. They have had a few victories here, you know, in the last, 50 years, they've been doing pretty good, but it'll never last. It'll never last, boys and girls.
Hamas execute current escalation of violence. There have been 13 attacks committed by pairs of terrorists from the West Bank or East Jerusalem. Two, or perhaps three terrorists committed the attack on Wednesday night in Har Bracha, while two others, Labib Azam and Muhammad Zagalawan, both 17-year-old students from the Palestinian village of Qariyat, committed the attack at the Eli settlement earlier in the day. The fact that the terrorists carry on attacks together increased, in some cases, the deadliness of the attack, such as the attack on the bus at the Arman Hanatiziv neighborhood in Jerusalem, where Baha Al-Yan and Bilal Ranem from Jebel Mukabir killed three Israelis, or the attack by terrorists Ibrahim Alan and Hussein Abu Ghosh, who murdered Shlomit Kriegman in Beit Horon, and the three terrorists from Kabataya, who murdered border police officer Hadar Cohen in an attack at the Damascus Gate in Jerusalem.
Hamas executed a member who allegedly led Israel to the hideout of the group's military leader. A few things are unclear. Did he give Israel intelligence? Was he being blackmailed? And how did he actually die? Mahmoud Eshtewi, who had two wives and three children, was recruited to Hamas's military wing in 2000. Eshtewi was arrested a few months after Operation Protective Edge. He was held in a Hamas detention center for a year and is believed to have been severely tortured. Only on February 7th did Hamas declare that he had been executed. The supposed justification was vague: moral and behavioral violations, to which he admitted during interrogation.
A second female soldier who served underneath Brigadier General Ofek Buchris complained on Wednesday that she had been sexually harassed by him, a day after he was first accused by another soldier. The soldier filed her complaint after the first accuser told investigators about other alleged victims. Buchris strongly denied, during questioning by the IDF Criminal Investigation Division, that he had any sexual contact with the second accuser. Investigators presented Buchris with details about specific events during which he allegedly sexually assaulted the first accuser. He responded with explanations that he said disproved the claims. Both women served under the Brigadier General when he was head of the Golani Brigade.
Well, there's a little bit of scuttlebutt from the land of the chosen people. That's Israeli radio. Quite a bit of interesting stuff comes out of there. Well, Obama gave Jordan 8 refurbished helicopters on Thursday for the battle against Islamic State extremists along the kingdom's borders. Pro-Western Jordan is part of the U.S.-led military coalition against ISIS, which controls large parts of the neighboring Syria and Iraq. The kingdom also faces internal threats from ISIS sympathizers. Earlier this week, Jordanian troops killed 7 suspected ISIS-linked militants in a raid in the north of the country. The suspects had allegedly plotted attacks on Jordan. Whoa.
A tribulation of following the news is the desperate peddling it would appall an Amway salesman of diversity, said to be our strength. Oh. Exactly why it is our strength is never specified. It seems to have brought no benefit beyond crime, rape, and genital mutilation. While the desirability of these advances is beyond dispute, it nonetheless seems to me that diversity has minor drawbacks worthy of consideration. So, brothels and cisterns, let us look at some of the resplendent marvels of diversity, and the onward march of human betterment and happiness attendant thereunto. What have been the relations between? In Germany, Germans, and Muslims. In Canada, frogs, Anglos, and Indians. In the United States, blacks, whites, browns, and Muslims. In Sri Lanka, Tamils, and Sinhalese. In Sweden, Swedes, and Muslims. In Ireland, Prots, and Catholics. In Rwanda, Hutus, and Tutsis, or maybe Tutus and Hutsis. In India, Hindus, and Muslims among others. In Israel, Jews, and Arabs. In France, French, and Muslims. In Sudan, Muslims, and Christians. In South Africa, Xhosa, Bantus, and whites. In Iraq and elsewhere, Shias and Sunnis. In Xinjiang, Chinese, and Muslims. In Spain, Basques, Catalans, and the rest. In Germany, Jews and Germans. In Turkey, Turks and Armenians and Kurds. In ISIS land, Muslims and Christians, Sunnis and Shias. In Indonesia, Indonesians and Chinese. In Holland, Dutch and Muslims. Most of these happy proximities have produced bloodbaths, actual genocide, or attempts at it, forced migration as when Uganda threw out its Indians, mass butchery by machete as in Rwanda, repeated bombings in London, and such like exuberances. Other disasters are still only in the simmering stage. Americans are among those being simmered. From which one might conclude that diversity is the principal cause of human unhappiness, mightn't one? In America, the pattern holds. We are seeing serious and increasing racial attacks by blacks on whites and the looting of shopping malls that has now become traditional, like picnics on the 4th of July, hunting and gathering. The importation of Muslims is reaching the point at which they can become the grave and irremediable problem that they are everywhere else. The growing Hispanic population causes friction, particularly in the Southwest, and provokes cries for expulsion. Lay the blame where you will, on white racists, black racists, racists of whatever color, on God, or genes or sunspots. But reflect, though, on how very much of the trouble reported daily in the news arises from diversity. For example, achievement gaps, suspension rates in schools, rapes, honor killings, shootings by police, shootings of blacks by blacks, complaints of discrimination,
interracial gang beatings, affirmative action, mass demonstrations, actual terrorism, shootings of cops, demands for censoring of books and the removal of statues and the renaming of highways. Diversity is by a wide margin the worst nightmare facing the United States. All of which would suggest even to the birds of the air, the kine of the fields, to box turtles and retarded marmosets and the alert among the great apes that diversity is a terrible idea. Mix different kinds of people and you get trouble. In politics, diversity also grates. Those most afflicted by the twin scourges of liberalism and conservatism despise each other and do not willingly associate. Feminists and men, city slickers and rednecks, dogs and cats all hate each other. So what should America's response be? Isn't it obvious? Yes. It's so clear. We should import more weird, backward, dull-witted, useless, and unassimilable civilizational disasters, many of which have produced nothing more technologically challenging than the pointed stick. What could be a better idea? And once we've got them, there's no getting rid of them. It is currently considered good manners to regard all cultures as equally meritorious, but let us see this idea as what it is, perhaps good manners, but political idiocy. Suppose that Jimmy Joe McQuiliker in Lost Hope, Tennessee genitally mutilated his daughters, refused to let them go to school, forced them to wear funny black bags, didn't let them go out alone, made them marry smelly elderly Pakistanis against their will, and killed them if they weren't virgins. That's equal. To what? But that's what we are importing, boys and girls. And if you don't think this 13th century nightmarish subhumanism is just peachy, why, you are Islamophobic. As any decent person would be. But here we come to the heart of the matter, Fairly Tales. The foundation of American political thinking, if that is quite the word, is that we should all love one another and therefore do, when in fact all of us don't, and those who say we should carefully avoid those who they think the rest of us should love. Simple declarative sentences are the soul of good writing. It might be a good idea for us to use such minor rational capacity as we have to avoid doing stupid things that will have a heavy price. The world is what it is, not what we want it to be. Mixing even civilized peoples is not a good idea. Put 30 million Japanese in America, or Americans in Japan, and trouble will result. This, even though the Japanese are an advanced and well-behaved people, and Americans are reasonably close. But Somalis, for God's sake. Syrians. The human animal is hardwired to be hostile to other groups, to strangers, to intruders. It is the dog pack instinct. This limbic paranoia manifests itself all through life. If a Russian recon plane comes near the United States, the Air Force frantically scrambles fighters to go intercept it, though the likelihood that Russia would send an ancient prop job to attack the United States is zero. When a strange dog passes in front of our house, our three mutts dash to the front fence to bark in witless territorial fury. They lack the hands to be pilots, though. When people have no cause for conflict, they invent it. For this we have football teams in which armored felons having no connection to us attack somebody else's. When people have no cause for conflict, they invent it. For this we have football teams in which armored felons having no connection to us attack somebody else's felons and we become deeply involved emotionally. In the city's street gangs, often though not always of different races, fight for territory as idiotically as countries. Always it is us and them, and we can always find them. Movies are largely about forces of good us against forces of bad them. Diversity. Spare me.
Well, let's check the mailbag. We don't do that too often, but we should do it more. Okay, we got one here from Creator Loeb from down in Florida, a prison. Some of the worst prisons in the country are in Florida and around those states in the South. Dear Brother Tom, loyalist greetings and much respect to you, sir. I had a pleasant surprise a few days ago. I actually received your letter and an enclosure, owing to the new mailroom personnel, I think. Anyway, it's always good to hear from you. Your views are always refreshing and much appreciated. I gave a bit of thought to your observation that the most oppressive prison systems are mostly in Christian-dominated geographical areas. On further review, as they say in the NFL, I think it's more racial, but not entirely racist. See, those areas you are referring to have a high black population by percentage, at least in certain areas, like Houston. Meanwhile, as you also know, the majority of those committing serious crimes are black. And interracial rape, for example, is even more disproportionately committed by blacks. Meanwhile, the vast majority of prison guards and police are white, and so they think that if they are extreme in their handling of such people, it's morally, though not legally, justifiable. It becomes a way of life until even white inmates and suspects are treated with undue brutality. In a way, it's understandable, I think. I'm a convict, and I don't like inmates or criminals myself. And I think that we have become far too liberal in this country anyway. For example, in Florida, we used to have the death penalty for rape. It was fully supported of that, and I think it should be reenacted. You could even say it was the Christians who undermined the death penalty. So Christians can be seen both as brutalizers and liberalizers. I think they are neither. Can't read that word. I say cops and prison guards are psychopaths. Hold it. Or become psychopaths. In the latter case, they may have their reasons, since the Reconstruction area, perhaps. I certainly agree with you in regard to voting. It's just an exercise in blame sharing. And as you point out, the paltry party or individual actually elect will be indistinguishable. All are entirely controlled by the international Zionist conspiracy. And again, you were right. There's nothing good on the horizon. Mrs. Clinton, a really miserable hag. Sanders, 79 years old, with pie in the sky. Trump, who knows what he might do. And Cruz, Trump was right. Everybody that's ever worked with Cruz hates him. So again, for this election cycle, the prospect for positive change appears to be near zero. Only Trump has stated any true policy to put in place. Deport illegal aliens. I like that idea. Definitely all the Republicans want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. I actually like the idea of it. Needs which have been used by big corporations who are part of the Republican Party benefactors' profile. The corporations are hiring millions of part-timers so that the corporations doesn't have to give health insurance benefits to its employees. It may not be well executed at the moment, but Obamacare is potentially well-intended solution. Well, it's well-intentioned to make the insurance companies a lot more money and break us up. They need more competition, like Trump even said. Insurance companies are not allowed to compete across state lines. That's ridiculous. There should be open competition in all the states of insurance. That's what would drive the price down. Or it should, anyhow. Your solution is to educate our people. I note that you continue to do a very good job with that. Radio show, archives, Facebook, and again, soon the website. Yes, continue to point out that the likes of Covington, too, are really traitors in our midst. You ask how you can help on a personal level, and maybe our struggle cannot be won on a case-by-case basis, but if I could someday somehow get justice by proving that the state and the federal government and their hand-picked Jewish prosecutor prosecuted me, a white man, they knew to be innocent, it could be big news, at least potentially. Right now, I could use a little research help. I need a URL down to the very last keystroke by which a person could get the key minutes and statements from my case. I'm referring to the witness statements made by Stephen Anthony Rutledge, accomplice of the guy I killed. It's best if people can get them from the official government website or an otherwise neutral commercial site engaged in search, storage, and retrieval of documents. Here's where they might be. He goes on, he got a bunch of complicated numerals and places where he can find it. I'll see what I can do. I have a lawyer friend that might help us on this. Okay. Whoops. I think that was the last page. Okay, that was the last page from George Loeb Jr. from Florida. Greetings, brother. I hope these few words... Pardon me, I had a sneeze. Okay. Greetings, brother. I hope these few words find you in good health and spirits. As for me, I guess I'm as good as possible, considering my present condition and circumstance. This prison life is for the blacks, not the chosen. The compound here is back on lockdown, and didn't anything even happen. Someone dropped a kite to the administration here saying they're was fixing to be a gang war, and they just locked us down. Today is the sixth day of lockdown. I've got to relocate upon my release. This state isn't for me anymore. I went up for parole on 12/7/15, and they put me off until 12/18, 3 years. The reasons was that I wouldn't conform to the conditions of my release, and it would have a substantial adverse effect on institutional discipline. What did they expect a 47-year-old man to do that has nobody on the outside to do when I'm released? Have you seen the news about Robertson County, Tennessee? School books are teaching the Muslim religion. This is one God, Allah, and His messenger. It's bullshit. Check it out on the internet. Crazy. These Muslims over here is going to be a problem. They will continue to hurt innocent American people. We want to know which ones are radicalized until we won't know until it's too late. I think we need to skin a couple on the world news. the ones that don't go back overseas should be executed. Well, that's the only one man's opinion. Okay, on the mailing address I gave you, said the correspondence to him, he will get it to me. Last time I think I said I sent it to that address, but my name. I received lots of letters, so in responding I make mistakes. Got some good worthy brothers being released in the next few months. Hope they stay out or at least commit a worthy offense if they're offended. Well, my brother, if at all possible, could you send me a copy of Unbroken Warrior? Jared, this guy's from, he's in Tennessee. Okay, let's see what else we got here. I can't read them all, but I'll read a few of them. Okay, now this was a letter sent to David Tate, who's in prison down in Missouri, from a person, I think it's a female, in Sweden. Dear David, I hope you're well. Thank you so much for your greeting card. Even if I'm not very good at German, I understand that meaning. Yes, I do hear some news from the U.S. about Trump. As you say, he seems like a better option than what you currently have. Here in Sweden, things are going totally out of control. Even the government now has taken some action. Immigrants are flooding in. Police have no control whatsoever to check who is coming in. Most of them has thrown away their papers, so they are called paperless immigrants, and they get asylum the moment they arrive. The riots and gang rapes has increased exponentially. Hate crime towards whites are increasing in huge numbers. White people are getting murdered, and when the people are demonstrating outside refugee houses against the murders, our governments are reacting by making demonstrations against racism. Not a word about the girls who are getting raped, gang raped, or the little girl who had her throat cut off. We have had Muslims that went abroad to fight for Islamic State. They're welcome back when they want to return, getting priority to work and lodge and lodging. You maybe think I'm kidding, but I'm not. This is an extremely severe situation. People are speaking of fleeing from their own country. Several of my comrades has moved to Hungary. There were an Estonian demonstration outside the embassy of Stockholm in Estonia, where the Estonians were demonstrating and encouraged Sweden not to accept more immigrants. There was a 20-year-old girl with a big sign saying, "We will welcome Swedish refugees when you have to flee from the Muslims." And that, my friend, is so close now. The government is the worst we ever had. The prime minister is a big clown liar, and his sidekick is a woman that is so extremely beyond reality. They make nice couple. Even if they now, too late, though, has taken some action to drop the flood of immigrants, they're already speaking of turning up to 100,000 immigrants a year again for 2 years. I call Tom, terrible Tommy, call them invaders. Don't call them immigrants. They're not fucking immigrants. They're invaders. These bastards are lying to the Swedish people, saying that we make money in the long run if we allow so many immigrants, invaders. Every economist in Sweden says otherwise, but the government gets support from media. Even some of the media actually has begun to raise their voice against the madness and other communists. I think your problem is more capitalistic than communist. I don't think they had a big race problem in the Soviet Union. Often actors or other public persons like they had any idea whatsoever about the economy. Meanwhile, other communists claim that Sweden has never been safer in the media. Of course, during the afternoon when many people, what's on TV, if anyone speaks out against this, they draw the racist card. Man, if I got a penny for every time the media writes or shouts the word racist, I'd be richer than Bill Gates. But there are also public people who are taking action against this. These people are 99% immigrants because the media can't use their racist card then. Sweden's most famous national economist is an immigrant from Iran, and he strongly and loudly responds to all the nonsense about how much money we make on immigration. Media can't use their racist card, so they try to do other things like saying he has an agenda, but he always has statistics 100%. Still, we haven't lost a debate. Another example which the commies first used to show how sorry we should feel about the immigrants was a professor called Hans Rosling, who had written about the situation in Syria. The commies screaming towards every voice that was upset about immigrants that they should read what Rosling wrote. Later on, in a direct live interview, Rosling said that the best way to help these people was to help them in Syria, not to allow them to come here. He said the Swedish Democrats, more or less nationalist party of Sweden, maybe like Trump, has been right all along. All of a sudden, no one mentioned Rosling anymore. More and more people are starting to wake up, but I can only hope it isn't too late. 20 years ago, we warned about the exchanging of populations, that our people were dying and the whites soon will become a minority in their own countries. I remember when all the others laughed at us, saying we were racist nutheads or paranoid youngsters that needed a reality check. The exchanging of the Swedish population is a fact. Very soon the Muslims can outvote us. Well, sorry, my friend, for babbling on. I don't know how much you know about the situation in Europe or Sweden. Sweden is taking more invaders than all other countries, and we only have 9 million inhabitants. But I know that foreign media laughs at Sweden, how we can be so naive and so on. And I think it's important that you get to hear that the situation here is even worse than you hear from your media. So enough with complaints. How are you doing, my friend? Did you get something extra for Christmas? Have you got visits from your family? Please give me an update. Have you heard anything about other brooders? I have some contact with Kemp, who is doing really good, and from what I know, haven't heard from Gary for a long time. I've written him 2 letters and got no response. Last I heard was that he had a real hard time and wasn't allowed mail. I also wrote to his wife, but I think that she doesn't get my emails. I know she mentioned before that there were some complications with her email. I haven't heard anything about Scutari or Dewey. I have Evans on Facebook, but he's more rarely on Facebook than me, and I'm almost never there. You ask about my politics here. At the moment, we have 2 parties here. One of them are truly nationalistic, but it is very, very small. The coming election will be their first, but I doubt they will make more than a couple of 100 voices. We had a larger true nationalistic party, but they decided to quit after they got disappointed election numbers last election. They were bigger. I think they got a couple of 1,000 voices, but they are no more. We also have the so-called Sweden Democrats, which was a nationalistic party before, but has turned to a more populistic side. 20 years ago, they were really good, but today, they are only artificially breathing for a dying Sweden. Some poll studies are saying that they are the biggest party in Sweden now. much of the Swedish people believe that this party is what it was 20 years ago. So that is a good thing, which indicates that more and more people are starting to awake. One funny thing is that there are many invaders that votes for Swedish Democrats. These invaders are not from Muslim countries or are Christians that fled the Muslims. They see this party as their only chance to get away from the Muslims. Even if I study and I work 2 days a week and only of my co-workers are Romanian, and he has always been anti-racist, always saying that the Swedish Democrats are a bunch of losers, and so on. Now he votes for them. I think that was all for now. I wish you, my friend, the best. I promise to write faster next time. Hope you can forgive me. Best wishes. Quite a rundown there from Sweden to David Tate. And, of course, this person, you know, I think more of the people overseas are communicating with the order POWs than Americans. I really believe that much of the right wing just forget about prisoners. They don't write them or do anything for them. But they get a lot more respect from Europe. Okay, here's one from David Tate. He sent that other letter along with his. Dear Tom, thanks for the $25 and the news articles. I appreciate how you have always thought of and cared for my brooders and me. I'd heard of all the rocky bumps with all the next generation Aryan Nations people over the years. I warned a whole slew of them about what a dirtbag Morris Gillette was. As usual, nobody listens. I do not know much about Roper, although I hear Mullet is okay. I gave up Aryan Nations and Israel identity in the mid-1990s for Christian separatism. So while I have a little interest in seeing where they are going, it's like anything else in the movements. They all tend to be cults of personality and one-man shows. I did stay in touch with Pastor Butler until his passing. We were always close despite my advancement in views. Speaking of identity, our church has recently published a book, The Jewish Myth of the Lost Tribes. Besides the obvious biblical historical discussion, we also provide evidence of how when Cromwell, the so-called architect of English Reformation, wanted to bring the Jews back to England in the 16th century, he fabricated the Lost Tribes myth to ease his betrayal of the English people. He made the claim that the English were the Lost Tribes of Israel, and since the Jews were Judah, they could bring their kindred home. Along with these beginnings of British Israelism came all the rest of the Jewish nonsense about Christians being Gentiles and whatever, whatnot. Over time, as white Christians were seeking ways to discredit Jews and Jewish-inspired communism in the early 19th century, British Israelism shifted to identity, with the Jews being the devil's kids, and odd pro-Jew offshoots like Armstrongism. Few identity know their lost Israel nonsense came from the Jews. The Jewish myth of the lost tribes is a $10 donation to White Cross Ministries, P.O. Box 188, Kodak, Tennessee, 37764. Little news with me. Typewriter's out to the shop. Family is well, except for Dad, as Parkinson's disease has in pretty bad shape lately. He probably moving in with my sis, so the family can better care for him. Take care for folk in faith. David Tate. Okay. I don't get an avalanche of letters, but I get letters from most of the POWs and people that count. Then I get quite a few, too, from new guys that have seen the light that are in prison. I always send them something, you know, something in the form of literature. And if they send me 5 stamps a month, I'll see they get books and things like that. So, works out pretty good. And, of course, if they're in solitary and can't get any stamps or any money or anything, I send it to them free. And thank you out there who contribute so well to this project that we can do that. Let's get back to A Pessimist's Guide to History in closing the show here today. I want to make you people feel better, because you may not feel good listening to all this bullshit politics and Jewish preachers and all that kind of stuff. So telling you how bad it was at different times in the old days may cheer you up. 1822, deadly cyclone in India. In June, about 50,000 people living near the mouth of the Ganges River were killed when a powerful cyclone struck the region. Wow. In 1822, an eruption of the Gulangung, some 4,000 people were killed and 100 villages were destroyed in Java when the volcano Gulangung erupted twice, first with torrent of boiling mud on October 8th, and then with a massive explosion on October 12th, which blew away the top of the volcano. And we're due for a big one here, too, one of these days. On the Pacific Ocean floor, there are approximately 10,000 volcanoes, about 3,000 feet high. Most are extinct. There are about 500 active volcanoes in the world. About 5% erupt in any given year. The Pacific is still a hotbed of activity, and I submit to you there's a hell of a lot more than 10,000 volcanoes at the bottom of the ocean. And they serve a good purpose until they go crazy, and then it's not such a good purpose. 1824, Barakpur Mutiny. The Indian soldiers, and that's the ones with the dots on their heads, of the British 47th Regiment of Native Infantry recognized two different imperatives, those of the caste system, and that had dominated the life in India for many centuries, and those of the British Army. In addition, the soldiers had a number of grievances against the British, not the least of which was that the British were offering camp followers more pay than the soldiers themselves. Well, how about you occupying their country? Don't you think that would piss them off a little bit? Matters came to a head on November 1st when the British commander ordered Indians in the regiment to carry their own supplies for a long march because pack animals were not available. But caste system taboos forbid the soldiers to do so. And when the British colonel arrived at the assembly area, he found only a few soldiers present. Defying orders, the soldiers had stayed behind with knapsacks off and their muskets loaded. They chased away the colonel and the officers of the regiment. And later that day, more Indian soldiers joined the mutiny. Meanwhile, the British brought in artillery and reinforcements. That'll teach them to have a race-mixed army. It's bullshit. Next morning at dawn, the British opened fire with the cannons. About 100 of the mutineers were killed and of many prisoners taken. 12 who were deemed to be the leaders were hanged. The rest were sentenced to 14 years in hard labor. The army erased the regiment's name from the army list, but the Indians' resentment was not to be dispensed with so easily. In fact, the brief revolt proved to be the harbinger of the bloody Sepoy Mutiny of 1857 to 1858. The British government did reprimand the military authorities for their rigidity. The Indians would get their revenge later. 1824, the Cairo Fire. In the early afternoon of March 21st, a relatively harmless fire began in the military barracks located in the old fortified citadel of Cairo, Egypt. but the flames soon spread to nearby arsenal where the munitions were stored. The first explosion of gunpowder chest an hour or two later, leveling surrounding buildings in the citadel and helped spread the fire further. Residents of the area fled in panic through the city's narrow streets. Later that day, two other explosions shook Cairo, but it was not until the next day that the fire seriously threatened the main powder magazine, which was contained enough powder to blow up the entire city. Troops battling the flames thus narrowly averted a major disaster when they succeeded in keeping the flames from the magazine. Nevertheless, the fire destroyed most all of the buildings in the old citadel and killed 4,000 horses, mules, and camels. 1824, 10,000 drowned in St. Petersburg, Russia. A furious gale on November 19th caused the Neva River to spill over its banks, flooding the Russian city of St. Petersburg with amazing speed. While the storm continued to rage, rapidly rising waters overtook people in the city's low-lying areas before they could escape. In just a few hours, St. Petersburg was inundated by floodwaters one story high. Struggling to survive, the hapless citizens watched their homes, livestock, and businesses float away. A whole regiment of soldiers was lost when their barracks were completely covered by the water. Although the waters receded just 8 hours after the flood began, some 10,000 people had lost their lives and property losses were enormous. Perhaps the worst news, however, was that nearly all the stores of food for the coming winter had been destroyed. St. Petersburg agony had just begun. 1825. New Brunswick fire. In early October, a fire of unknown origins began deep in the vast woods of the Canadian province of New Brunswick. A long season of drought had baked the forest as dry as tinder, and the fire spread relentlessly. The heat and the smoke from the advancing flames eventually reached the town of Fredericton, but no one even guessed the extent of the blaze then. Finally, heavy winds swept through the area on October 7th, carrying torrents of burning cinders and driving flames into the towns of Fredericton and Newcastle. Houses were instantly incinerated, killing many people in their beds. Those fortunate enough to have time to escape fled into the St. John River in boats, canoes, and long rafts. There they were pelted with wind-blown cinders, and some boats burned on the river. Meanwhile, the night sky was lit with the reflection of fires extending for miles into the distance. Before the fire finally burned out, the smoke burned the eyes and lungs of people as far away as Montreal and even Baltimore. Some 160 people died in the flames, and 4 million acres of forest were destroyed. Wow, now don't you feel good? Don't you feel better, boys and girls? Boy, I feel a lot better. 1826 to 1837, cholera epidemics ravaged Europe. Yep. A painter of pottery had the dubious distinction of becoming the first person in Britain known to have contracted cholera. He suffered with vomiting, chills, fever, and diarrhea. His face was covered with cold sweat and his lips were blue, while his voice and pulse became so weak that it to be almost imperceptible. Amazingly, he recovered, but a few days later, another worker in the same area collapsed with identical symptoms and died. Doctors called the quickly spreading malady summer diarrhea. Actually, it was just the beginning in Britain of what became devastating cholera epidemic throughout Europe. Millions in Britain and other European countries eventually died of the disease. Cholera had been an ever-present threat in India since the 5th century, but until the early 19th century, these intestinal scourges had largely been confined there to India. The increase of trade and contact with other countries slowly began to spread it in epidemic outbreaks, first in Asia, then in Europe, and the rest of the world. Some 900,000 Europeans died of it in 1831 alone. Renewed worldwide cholera epidemics in 1840, 42, 1863 to 75, 1893 to 95 killed millions more. Cholera occurs annually in India. So there you go. Importing all these people from all over the world, from the pits of Asia, pits of Africa, and everything else, you're going to pay. We're going to pay. I don't see why people can't see that. Many of these diseases we don't even have medicine for. And many of the medicines we're using are losing their effect on people. I mean, we're looking at Armageddon, really. I mean, health-wise, and probably water-wise, a lack of water, and that with that will come the lack of food and everything. So hold on to your belt, boys, because it's got to happen. And they're not gonna, the leaders are not going to do anything because they don't know what to do. They have to please the wealthy class, keep them at plenty of money. Unless the people rise up and raise hell themselves and take over, nothing will change. Nothing. And that's it. I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day, She-Wolf Day in the bunker, okay? I guess I'll watch a little of this insanity of debates and stuff. And what's his name, that idiot from Massachusetts that ran for governor? I forget. He gonna come out with something and blast Trump tonight. It's going to be funny. Come on, chaos. Come on.
The ones that don't know when the conversation is over. They just go on and on and on and on and on. Verbal diarrhea running at the mouth. And dumb shit, stupid shit, trivial shit. Shit you're not even remotely interested in.
Did I tell you about my mom and dad? Did I tell you about my mom and dad were down on vacation. This is about 6 years ago, I think. Down in Mammoth Cave, Kentucky. I think it was six. Seemed like six. Could have been seven. Somewhere in there. Six, seven, in that area. More than six, less than seven.
Let's call it 6 and a half. So about 6 and a half years ago, my mom and dad went on vacation down in Mammoth Cave, Kentucky. You know, now that I think of it, it seems more like 8 years ago. I think about 8 would be about the time of Y2K, wouldn't it? Remember that? Remember Y2K? When nothing ever happened. What was that all about? All of a big fuss and nothing ever happened. Anyway, so about 8 years. It was eight or five, one of those. And my dad found a big rock, what he thought was a big rock, and it turns out it was a 27-pound dinosaur turd. A petrified dinosaur turd, and he gave it to my mom. He said, "Here, Mom, put this. This is a dinosaur turd. Put this in your purse." And she said, "Dad, I don't think this is a dinosaur turd. This thing is still warm. Whoever dropped this thing is still walking around in here, and we better get the fuck out of this cave." I know it was nine, because my wife was pregnant with our first son, Mahmoud Ibn El Said Ben Salam. And he's 10 now. Or is he 11? He could be 11. He's either 11 or 5. And while all this is going on, you're searching through your mind for something graceful and diplomatic you can say to bring the conversation to a close. And all I can ever come up with is, "Shut the fuck up! Shut the fuck up! Shut the fuck up! Shut the fuck up!"